Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 75 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me, what other crew would I bring for Episode 75 except Matthew Aguilar?
What up?
Janelle Wheeler.
Hey, everybody.
And Mr. Connor Casey is back with us.
What's up?
Today we got like a weird hodgepodge of things. I was away on vacation for a moment, and now I'm back. And it seems like when I came back, I'm here at a weird time. Like I said, this is gonna be a weird hodgepodge show. But yeah, let's leave the Slim Shady out of this.
Action packed.
Yeah. No, I mean it is
diverse.
Hodgepodge. I don't lie to the people. I don't like to lie. We try to keep it really real in this show. So we're going to talk about something that happened. The Mad Max franchise is coming back. I didn't expect that one when I woke up today, but here we are. So we're going to talk about what's happening next with the Mad Max franchise. We got to get into that Green Lantern HBO Max series and things that dropped, of course, right after we recorded last week. You know how this show goes. We're going to talk about some interesting things happening in the world of streaming. We haven't checked in a long time. We were kind of talking about the streaming wars this year before like HBO Max dropped and Peacock arrived. So we're going to take a kind of update on that because there are some interesting things happening. Plus, we got a deep dive into the season finale of The Boys. I'm going to check in real quick with what's going on with Lovecraft Country. We got to talk about Fear the Walking Dead making its comeback. And this is a comic book show, so we got to talk about comics as well. And there are some exciting things happening in comics, so we got to get to that. So, like I said, here's the hodgepodge show. I hope you're down with it. Let's jump right up to the top. Like I said, we were kind of coming in. I thought like Green Lantern was going to be like our main focus of the show, but then something happened. We got an announcement that Mad Max Fury Road spinoff, well, prequel, Mad Max Furiosa is moving forward, and it is going to be moving forward with writer-director George Miller, which is a big thing I want to get out front because that's awesome. And we've gotten some casting for the film already. First of all, we're going to see Anya Taylor-Joy, star of The Witch and Split, and most recently, of course, New Mutants, who is going to be playing the young version of Furiosa, the character played by Charlize Theron in Mad Max Fury Road. And she will be joined in the film by no less than Chris Hemsworth and Yahya Abdul-Mateen, too.
Love that.
So two big Marvel / DC stars right there.
Huge.
Yeah, if you... Chris Hemsworth, of course, is Thor. We don't need to go who Hemsworth is. Yahya, if you don't recognize that name, he was Black Manta and Aquaman. He was Dr. Manhattan on HBO's Watchmen. Just having, like, best year ever of acting.
Yeah, he's been killing it.
Yeah, he's going to be in Candyman when that finally gets released.
Right. Oh my gosh, I forgot.
Yeah, yes. So it was a great year. So man's killing it. So this is exciting stuff. I don't have real analysis or discussion for this because it's like, okay, yeah, that's awesome.
Right. You have the Charlize Theron situation where I think it's very sweet that she's kind of bummed that she can't be a part of this because it just goes to show you how much she really cares about the character she plays. And I'm kind of actually bummed also that they can't just CGI her younger. But yeah, I mean, she's excited about the movie too. I just think she's such an awesome actress and she's just a good personality to have attached to movie. So I am kind of bummed about that.
Charlize Theron ain't sponsoring the show. I love her, but she ain't sponsoring the show.
I know. She's one of my favorites though. Seriously.
Keep the tributes at a minimum unless they're dropping some sponsorship or appearing on the show.
So you really wouldn't want to see a young CGI version of her? Like you're all amped
absolutely
up.
Absolutely not. Okay. Anya Taylor-Joy is a great actress. I'm psyched that she got this part. I've loved basically everything she's been in. I like The Witch really a lot. She's great in Split. I didn't see New Mutants, but I assume she was pretty cool.
Me neither.
Magic. So
Kofi, yeah. I'll counter that because when it comes to Furiosa, people care more that it was a great Charlize Theron performance in Fury Road not, oh, this character is so interesting. It's, no, Charlize Theron's a fantastic actress, and we'd love to see more of her. I'd almost argue that's more of the reason why this got greenlit more than anything, was the excitement surrounding her. Now, well, I love the cast, and George Miller was the reason that Fury Road was so great. So I have no doubt this movie will also be great, but you can't tell me there aren't going to be some fans going, man, I wish Charlize was in this somehow.
Oh no, I'm down. I stump for Charlize Theron like all the time. I love everything she does, from Young Adult to Mad Max Fury Road to like everything. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, like, I don't want to see a de-aged version of Charlize Theron in a whole movie. I mean, there's
especially as like the lead.
There's so many problems with that I don't want to do. Like, we've tackled like extended performance with male de-aging. I don't want to know if I want to get into it for the ladies quite yet. I don't think we're there yet. And I think they even say in the same article I'm looking at that we're not there yet. We don't want to go there.
Right. He even says, everyone is on the verge of solving it. Japanese video game designers are great, but they're still not there, is basically what they're saying. Like, they wanted to have her on. They really did.
Exactly. Like, and so if you got to pick somebody else, I like Anya Taylor-Joy. And it's not that Furiosa was like some character that I was like, I want to see more of, but she was, what made her interesting and what Charlize Theron, I think, did so well in Mad Max Fury Road was Mad Max Fury Road, I think I even wrote about this, like, reviewing the movie, is like a really great short story in the fact that it doesn't, there's not, like, flashbacks and extensive backstory and exposition. Right. These people, they got a bunch of actors who are really good at just telling these stories with, like, their eyes, their faces, their costumes.
Yeah.
And Furiosa was a chick that you could tell was so deep and had been through so much. Like, you know, whatever happened to her arm, to, you know, like, just the kind of attitude and spirit she had, and why she ultimately joins, you know, with Max and does this whole thing in that movie.
Right.
So there is a story there to tell in kind of the same vein that George Miller tells it, in more action and throttle and stuff like that than everybody espousing, like, long monologues and all that crap. But, like, I think there is room for that character to have an interesting story built around her.
Absolutely.
And I will say this with the caveat, I've learned things on this podcast, but that I would only trust George Miller to do this. I wouldn't trust like B movie director to take a Furiosa spinoff. I'd be kind of looking sideways, but I trust George Miller to take some of the ideas and themes of that character and grow it into a prequel story that's actually pretty interesting.
How many Mad Max films have there been? Is it five? Four?
This is number four.
And this is the first one that's not focused on Max.
Correct.
Yeah.
Wow. That's going to be really cool.
Though you could argue Fury Road isn't focused on him anyway.
Right.
He's very much a side character in his own movie.
Yeah. That's really cool.
So
I'm excited.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm psyched for this, and I'm interested to see what Yaya and Chris Hemsworth do. I mean, I hope they do something with Chris Hemsworth that's not just like Mad Max surrogate.
I feel like that's very likely, is they're going to be like, give us your best Tom Hardy growl.
And be like, oh, this is why, because when she was a young girl, she met Chris Hemsworth. Yes, we'd all be affected by that.
Yes.
That would cause us all to rebel later in life. Yes. So, yeah, I'm psyched. I mean, you had me at George Miller is really where I can leave this rest with all the other debate. So Mad Max continuing, looking forward to it. All right. Moving right along from that interesting bit of news over to the thing we kind of missed out on last week.
Yeah.
Matt pulled together a really good show. I actually enjoyed listening to it as a listener, but then I saw the Green Lantern thing and I just laughed because
I was so annoyed.
But as another little silver lining, we did get a bit of clout because HBO Max actually tweeted out our article about this as their like official announcement of this thing happening. So
as brightest day, blackest night, son.
Yeah, I said, you know, I had to on the Comic Book Nation account, we recognize the clout of that little move. So
bravo.
I mean, there was a silver lining to all that, and now we get to talk about it.
Hey,
so, Green Lantern HBO Max series. We've been wondering what the hell is going on with that thing and how it would take shape. And now, I mean, this is kind of interesting what we've gotten. There's going to be 10 episodes. And we thought we were like, you know, the debate's always like, oh, which lanterns are they going to be about and blah, blah, blah. And now we find out it's like all of them.
Which is huge.
Some of them.
Yeah, no, I know. But like,
except for like three.
Yeah. Okay. Right. But we're still getting like Alan Scott, Kilowog, Guy Gardner, Jessica Drew, Simon Baz. Important.
Not Jessica Drew. More. Jessica Cruz. Sorry. I said Jessica Drew. Yeah, I was like, I got all excited.
When you're, and I'm sure there's going to be more as it kind of grows.
That's what I was going to say. There's some potential.
Big main ones. And Sinestro will be in it too. So it's going to be almost like an anthology thing. If I'm not missing this, like, right. It's kind of like going to focus on.
They have said that it will have, because of course people brought up that Rainer, Jordan, like those are missing, but they have said that, you know, the line will be blurred between like what is connected and what is not. So they haven't really been forthcoming with that information yet. And when this first started like percolating, like it was Alan Scott. Like Alan Scott was the person that was kind of known like for like a year of like, I've been excited for like, oh, it's going to be an Alan Scott series. And then they kind of added all these other people in. I was like, oh, well, that changes the whole landscape of this. Cause like initially it was thought it was going to be like all about him, and it was going to be about the first Green Lantern. And it was going to be like exploring all those different things. And now it's like the fact that Baz is in it and Cruz and certain ones are in it. Not like, it's, well, it's they tease.
Let's read the official log line from HBO Max, DC, Berlanti Productions, and Warner Brothers Television. Comes a bold adaptation of the iconic comic book franchise, a saga spanning decades and galaxies. Green Lantern will depict the adventures of a multitude of lanterns, including Guy Gardner, Jessica Cruz, Simon Baz, and Alan Scott, Earth's first Green Lantern, who, true to the comics, is a gay man, and many more. The series will also include fan favorites such as Sinestro and Kilowog, and will also introduce new heroes to the ranks of the Green Lantern Corps.
Excited.
HBO needs to hire you.
That was good. That's a good reason. I'm stoked for that. I can't wait for that. I like that they've been picked up for 10 episodes, right?
Already, yeah.
Expected to 10. Be about an hour long. So yeah, I'm stoked. I am very curious to see the format.
I feel what? Like from this, I feel like the kind of binding thread will be the rings, yeah. And like the whole idea of the rings and the willpower and how that kind of establishes. And they could also do a Tales of the Green Lantern Corps from Oa, from just like, you know, recruits. There's a lot of ways to kind of do it. So I'm kind of interested too.
Green Lantern was the easiest pitch for a TV show in the world because it's space cops with magic rings.
So cool.
You can do literally anything with that.
Yeah, so you can.
This can be really hard to screw up. This one's going to be fun.
Yeah, I'm looking for the kind of different flavors of different stories. So, I mean, it was going to be kind of cool. All right, HBO Max, building that DC universe. And you know this, I feel like this is going to culminate in some kind of Kyle Rayner or Hal Jordan or Jon Stewart type deal.
I need the Torchbearer, man. That's what I need. I need my boy. Kyle Rayner, I need
him. Maybe it's all a rescue mission to go get him. Who knows?
He didn't say.
All right, so moving on from Green Lantern, let's talk about what's going on at streaming. So I was just doing like one thing I thought that, you know, Matt sent me, and then I just started looking and there's more and more. So there's a couple things to talk about on the streaming front. First of all, this is a quick one, so we'll just get it out of the way. Sticking with HBO Max, we've all been wondering what's going to happen with those DC Universe series. Then we found out they were going to be moving over. Like we predicted, they're dumping off the DC Universe, which is becoming DC Universe Infinite for digital. They're basically doing what we said they were going to do on this show.
They're you called it. You really did several times.
Dumping all the kind of original series stuff onto HBO Max and taking the comics library, making a bigger thing in DC Universe Infinite. Cool. Win-win. So we now have dates for kind of when these DC Universe series are coming over. Titans and Young Justice are coming November 1st. Stargirl will arrive on December 1st. And we're getting more seasons of Titans, Harley Quinn, and Doom Patrol all coming to HBO Max.
Nice.
So that's good. Sounds like, I mean, I'm really happy for Titans and Young Justice to kind of get that exposure on HBO Max, especially Titans, because I think it deserves it for what they accomplished. But yeah, this is good. I mean, now we'll get to see what kind of run these things get and if they do have some like actual lifeblood because of the distribution problems, which were always kind of holding them back. Sounds like we're going to be solving that problems.
They've succeeded despite the platform. And now we actually get to see if they are well received, because like I feel like the fact that they've half of them have gained traction at all with such a small install base and right. such a small little avenue. Yeah, I agree with Kofi. I feel like now we finally get to see like what shows will stick around because
yeah.
they're attracting fans. Yeah. As opposed to just like, this is all we have.
And isn't like Swamp Thing doing well, like airing on TV?
Yeah. This could be the thing. Yeah,
Swamp Thing's doing its thing. So good for Swamp Thing, man. It's good because people worked hard on the shows and they actually did a really good job. Mm-hmm. All right, so that's one thing. This was an interesting thing. Amazon Prime is gaining on Netflix as a streaming thing. I mean, that's not to say Netflix has to start sweating yet.
Yeah,
so, I mean, it's still kind of doing good, but Amazon came up to like a 21% share in streaming. Like, yeah, they're getting in there and getting that for quarter three, which was unexpected. I didn't think Prime Video was sneaking up like that, but I mean, The Boys, obviously,
that's a major
one, was like a big hit.
Utopia's done
I've heard really good things about Utopia. Actually,
yeah, it's doing well. I mean,
I'm probably gonna dive into that soon.
My in-laws and people were like talking to me about Utopia. So that's actually catching on really well. But I guess it does make sense. But Amazon's done it smart. Like, they just do it quietly, man. They just kind of keep pumping out stuff.
They're creeping.
Which is the Marvelous Miss Maisel? Is that
I love that show. Obsessed.
When you just start thinking about it, start looking into it, you're like,
They are very much one of those where it's like you mention an actor and like, I don't know who that is. And then you start mentioning what roles they've been in. You're that guy.
Or awards they've won.
Yeah, very much that.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And Hunters is them too, right?
Yeah. Hunters was them. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, Prime Video is doing the right things and they're doing it well. It's like, it's not a lot of hype or fanfare. They just come, they deliver. I mean, except for The Boys, which built its own. And it's kind of an organic one, and they have done a good job, I guess. They also do a good job putting on like interesting movies and stuff. I find
myself jumping
to Prime Video and kind of watching movies a lot on there.
I mean, even without Prime, I whenever I rent a movie, I just go through Prime. Like, I don't do Fandango or any. Yeah. I just go straight through Prime.
And when I buy movies digitally, I always go through Prime too.
Yeah,
so I'm just realizing for like my kids' libraries and myself.
Right.
Like, if I'm going to be watching, and I use Prime, and here's the key. Prime is also one of these that has like integrated with Xfinity and was like the second one after Netflix to do that, really, so that I could just say into my remote Prime Video and just start like, you know, really watching
Hulu's
on this. So like, yeah. And now Hulu's on there. So that's all good. So, I mean, so it's pretty good. So interesting. I mean, we were all like Disney Plus, Netflix, Disney Plus, Mandalorian coming soon.
Yeah, they need that.
Has Disney Plus been the biggest letdown of the streaming services?
Yes.
Because I feel Peacock has overperformed. I love Peacock now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Peacock really surprised. And again, quietly, just like it did its free kind of like little rollout on Comcast. And then like it launched, and that free tier really gets people in. I mean,
And like, I feel like no one expected anything out of Apple, so I don't care.
I've never watched anything on Apple.
I think I have a subscription to Apple that I just forget about, and I don't think I've pressed play on one thing.
I feel like they came out of the gate with the most hype, and it's been the one I don't watch at all.
Same. I'll say the biggest surprise for me has been HBO Max, which I find has somehow become my like hub. Like, I go to that first.
It's good too. Yeah.
And like, because it has a lot of the content that I'm watching, like the HBO content kind of sucks me in. And then
I just feel like they didn't launch properly. If they would have actually been available on the biggest, you already know this argument for me, streaming devices, then they would have actually gotten more traction. And I think they will, because they're releasing now. So people better watch out for HBO Max too.
The Hulu thing kind of solved that for me, because like, it is limit. So here's what I figured out, because I was talking to Janelle off show about this. So what I finally did was, there was a mix up because it's a whole thing, but because of another cable subscriber who had HBO that I went through, they had my email, but so I couldn't like make an account. So I had to go, eventually I went through Hulu. So basically you can add HBO Max through Hulu. Now that means you can watch stuff through Hulu on your TV, but you can only watch HBO content. You cannot watch HBO Max original content because of licensing through Hulu.
Right.
That is the kind of split. So like the Val, and that took me a minute to realize.
But are you paying the same monthly?
Yes.
HBO Max.
Yes, but your Hulu works as your HBO Max. So you can go into the HBO Max platform as a regular subscriber. You just can't watch HBO Max original content So if the key is here that if you can't watch HBO Max on like your main TV, but you can watch Hulu on your main TV, you can at least watch like the HBO content. Like, so you can watch Lovecraft Country, The Vow, and like stuff like that on your main TV through Hulu. But for HBO Max originals, you would still have to.
So what about like when DC stuff starts dropping, you can't watch that? Like, you're not going to be able to watch that through Hulu?
No, that'll be HBO Max original.
That which is still not, is it confirmed it's still not available on?
Yeah, not yet.
Oh my gosh, it's going to happen.
Hurdle. Yeah, it will. But when it does, that is their main hurdle is still.
I agree.
The sheer confusion and cluster the fact that like Kofi had to find that.
Yeah. Well, I didn't see, I signed up for it and funny enough, it was my wife. I thought I was all good because like I said, I was mainly watching the HBO series through.
Right.
So it was her who finally said, "Hey man, there's something weird about this because I'm trying to find this thing and it's nowhere on Hulu." And then I had to go back and look at it. And then I was like, did I just pay Hulu for like half an HBO Max subscription? And I was like on the warpath. And then HBO I finally went, but then you go to HBO Max through the main platform and it's just sign in through your provider. And one of them is Hulu. And so you just put in your Hulu credentials and then you can just access the main site through that. So at least I got you. You could at least be watching Lovecraft Country in the Vow. You could at least be partially with the cool kids.
I'm still holding out until everything's just clean and good.
You fight that good fight. You fight the good fight. All right. So we got to take a break in a minute, but one last note is ironically, we were just ragging on it, but Disney's now apparently realized that Disney Plus is lagging. So they're going to be putting more emphasis on getting that streaming side built up with more content because I think they're beginning to realize, all this Marvel and just Star Wars stuff isn't enough to carry an entire streaming service. You got to probably do some other stuff because
say more content.
More content.
Disney Plus is my least sign-inable streaming service.
Right I haven't now. Signed in since
you just been paying. We're all
you mean y'all aren't watching Disney. Hocus Pocus?
Well, okay, I get it free because of that deal. Who was it? Was it Verizon?
Yeah.
Oh, got it.
For a year. So like whatever, ain't skin off my back. But like, I haven't signed in since I think Mandalorian ended. I'm pretty
sure. You're gonna sign back in when Mandalorian starts.
I will go, and then when it's done, I will go right back to that out. Period.
Yeah, yeah, WandaVision's great. Coming. WandaVision and the Marvel stuff will hopefully.
Oh my
start
gosh,
to roll
I can't
out.
Wait.
But yeah, so good luck, Disney, because you're kinda getting swept up. That HBO Max, Amazon, that Peacock,
you have the
they
most
all came out.
IP. And somehow you're getting kind of handed to you. I mean, I'm sorry. Like, aside from Warner Brothers, they have the most in-house IP.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
And they're getting a little chewed. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels like no one's talking about Disney Plus other than the fact that things are delayed. Like, everything is talking about
except
Disney
I'm
Plus.
On quarantine and I don't want to see my kids anymore. Here's the remote. Here's Disney Plus. Leave me alone. That's about it. And even now, I think my kids are starting to turn towards Bugs Bunny. He's getting a lot of love in my house. So,
All right.
Moving right along. Let's take a break, pay some bills. And when we come back, we got to start our deep dive into a bunch of stuff we got to talk about today on the TV and comic book front. So stay and wrestling. Oh, my God, we got to move. So stay tuned for all of that.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
All right, we're back. Let's start on the TV front. The Boys. The Boys season finale has now been released. We are going to talk full spoilers for this, okay? So if you're listening to this and you're just listening to our finale talk, I don't know why, because I mean, the show's been over for a hot minute. I mean, it's been out for a hot minute.
Yes.
And we're now just getting to the end of it. But we're going to be talking full spoilers about The Boys season finale. All right. That said, I love The Boys season two. I think this might be one of my favorite sophomore seasons overall of all time, because usually the sophomore slump is such a real thing.
It seriously is. Yes.
Yeah. And I remember how I was kind of split in the premiere episodes when we were done. I was ambivalent about a few things.
Same.
And they kind of worked out.
Yeah.
I never really got into the Huey stuff, but I think at least he got that episode of rescuing or attempting to rescue Starlight, where he basically, just Forrest Gumps his way through a rift.
Yeah. So good.
But ends up getting to look cool for the girl and all that. And that's a really fun payoff to Huey's story. I think it's funny how the season ends. I mean, he kind of mocks him still with his like big, I'm going to stand up and be a big boy on my own thing, and only to find out he's just now a pawn of yet an even worse person. But that's the big thing. Let's just start with the big thing. This season actually pulled off a really good mystery and kind of managed to shock me at the end with a mystery of the exploding heads and the assassin who's killing people. And of course, it turns out to be that congresswoman who...
Victoria Newman.
Newman, who's campaigning against Vought and all that, turns out to be a psycho super of her own who's kind of playing everybody in some awesome Kaiser Sose type way. That was a nice little twist and surprise, because I haven't read the comics. So if this is in the comics, I have
no that idea. Is not.
Okay.
That character is actually based on, there's a Victor in the books, which is like this vice president character. That's not, they twisted that all around. So.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah. I mean, that turned out well. Cause that was a nice little surprise. Because the exploding head thing is such a big, shocking spectacle throughout the season. But for somehow The Boys does a good job of making you like just go along with things and not stop to like question heavily. Not like, I need to know who's exploding heads.
Right.
Like just the idea that people could suddenly at any moment have their heads start exploding kind of keeps you on edge.
I thought it was the person from the institution that escaped and caught the car.
Yeah, the girl.
Yeah.
That didn't track, because we saw someone explode while she was still in the prison, and her thing wasn't, oh, I make your head explode. It's I make your whole
everything
body explode.
But I was still convinced.
I thought it was possibly Stan Edgar, like the Vought guy who was doing it.
Right.
And like knocking people off. The last episode was, I really enjoyed that. The fight against Stormfront is probably like the most satisfying thing.
Oh my God.
The dialogue in that dialogue in that fight. Just like all the things. And again, what blows my mind is that The Boys filmed all this before they ever knew 2020 was going to be like what it was.
Yes.
But just how cathartic that was, and all the things they're yelling at her as they're just like basically stomping her head in. I was like, man, Avengers Endgame A-Force moment was an ish compared to this. Like,
not even close.
Yeah. Those girls did a good job of just stomping it.
That was awesome.
I didn't like the... what I thought was a kind of, I mean, I know it's a season finale, so everything, you know, has to kind of wrap up. But what I love about The Boys is the fact that it is these normal people going up against super people is like whenever they're in a scene together, it is really scary about like, how is this person not about to get like torn apart in 3 seconds? And like Butcher facing down Homelander was really great. And I thought, I was just like, oh, okay. I mean, I love how they brought all the storylines around together so that like Queen Maeve and that tape and all that thing she went through
mm-hmm.
used. But I was like, okay, that's a really slim hold on somebody like a Homelander. So
yeah,
I was like, okay, everybody walks away. I get it. You know, that's fine. But
yeah, I didn't mind that as much, just because, like you said, the emotional stuff in that scene is way more interesting to me than some like sort of weird, like coming up with something else there and having them like actually like face off. Cause we do get some of that.
Mm-hmm.
But like having them like have some like climactic fight. The fact that like Ryan is like the stuff between Ryan and Homelander and like him choosing one who isn't really a fan of him, who isn't this
he barely knows.
Parental figure. Yeah. That stuff is way more interesting to me than any kind of would be fight between them.
Oh, like, no, I feel I just like meant,
that's
like,
paid off later.
I just meant like the way they got out of it. I was like really hoping like the kid would just like clock the crap and knock Homelander.
It
like,
broke my heart him. That he kills his mom.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean, oh my gosh, that was terrible.
Accidentally. Yeah. But I.
Yeah, but no. I mean, I'm not blaming him. But it hurts.
Can we just acknowledge Anthony Starr in this episode? I think for me, took it from being, hey, this guy's a great character actor, to we might need to start talking about awards for his performance as Homelander, because between all of his stuff with Ryan, the look he gives Butcher as the camera pans over and Ryan's behind him, and he just starts laughing because he's like, you again? I keep running into just you. I could snap you like a twig.
But that's and why it's great.
The speech at the end where he is screaming through his eyes and the camera just keeps panning into those. Mm-hmm. And he's just got this bright and happy kind of speech going on the whole time. You're just like, this man is insane.
He's so good.
And I didn't even bring up when he's
fantastic.
And then when he just walks into the cabin and all the SWAT guys are there, did you just say Butcher? And then he just shuts the door slowly. Where's my son? Oh, sweet Christ. Everyone's dead.
I love how Kofi doesn't come after anyone else for fanning out.
I'm sorry. You know, for this episode, you got to give it to him.
No, he's amazing. That was just so good. I agree. I think that, honestly, I feel like he is the lifeblood of this
show. And you missed the point. Anthony Starr has done this show.
Yes. Yeah, he's like you're talking about the show.
No, that man has helped promote this show so he can get fanned out on.
Oh, this show, Comic-Con.
Our old Matt did a nice little interview with him.
It was a good interview, too.
Yeah, so he's...
I love that.
Yeah, he's paid the entry fee, so he can get fanned out on.
I love how in interviews he kind of plays with it.
Not pay me as unjust. I am a just ruler. Like, if you, fan, you help promote the show, you get fanned on. We you know.
Something a little... Go ahead, Connor.
Something a little less fanboy, though, because when I first watched the episode, there were a couple things where I was like, man, we didn't really go back to certain things I was hoping we would. Like, we all thought Aya Cash was going to have some sort of extra twist where actually I was playing Homelander the whole time. She wasn't. The church winds up just kind of being a punchline as opposed to like, hey, maybe this is the buildup for season 3. But then I thought about it and I go, you know what? This is the kind of show that would go, you know what? The Nazi does not deserve to have a secret master plan. She deserves to get her head stomped in.
Right.
The Scientology parody doesn't need to be the secret evil Hydra organization.
Or explored into. Yeah.
Yeah.
It deserves to be a punchline. Like, I love the statement that made.
Yeah. It subverts things that you think would like, cause that is what we're trained to assume that there's like this extra thing. And like the church, I love that it just stops. Like there's no like his head blows up and there's nothing else. And she's just looking out there and you don't give two like you don't care
poor
about
Deep.
The church, right?
What is Deep gonna do?
Poor Deep.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, and it all is the boys is like also deeply a cynical story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's like the point was that I mean it did make its point that all these things were linked, right? That was the big reveal that, you know, the political crusader, the dirty businessman who over even as a black guy overlooks the Nazi past of the company for the sake of the shareholders, the crazy extremist and the, you know, supposedly holy religion side are all in this pot, dirty little pot together, scheming together. Even while, you know, seeming to be enemies and things like that, or opposing forces. And that was kind of the point, like that, especially that last episode. Was like Stan. I mean, you saw these scenes that Stan Edgar sits down with the church guy sits down with the political lady, and like all these people are caught in the middle and getting kind of like messed up, and they're creating these even more dangerous things, like Homelander's now an unhinged psycho, and like all that stuff. Yeah. And so
gosh, that last scene of him.
Oh my god! Which I find it funny that that was supposed to be in season 1.
That they couldn't do because they were like, can't do that.
They couldn't do it.
Like, yes, and then
they stuck it in here. Because now it's like, it's fine, right? They have the.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that. That's really cool.
Two interesting nuggets because one, we talked a little bit about that like Black Noir fight with Starlight, which is really like a thrashing for a minute until Maeve, right? That is actually that like weakness of his, the Almond Joy scene, which I loved.
Yeah.
That is actually based on like his real life, Nathan Mitchell's real life allergy.
Oh my god!
They actually wrote that into the like into.
Oh,
the
that's
thing.
Brilliant.
And then Claudia Dumit, I think I'm saying, I'm pronouncing it correctly, who plays Victoria. She said like when she was doing like auditioning for the role, and then she got the role, and she was like on set. She didn't know she was the villain. She didn't know she was like the one exploding heads and stuff like that. So she was always kind of like, Eric was so excited, right? Because Eric Kripke, right, the showrunner, was like super excited about this part. And she never knew why for like the longest time. So she was like, I guess he's just really excited for like a congresswoman. I don't know. He was always super geeky when like he got around her and started talking about stuff. And then it came out. She's like, oh, and like exploding heads. I think all that stuff is just really, really fun. So, yeah. This season finale delivered.
So I got to say this, because this is kind of the only place I can vent about these sort of things. I feel like this season took this show from being a fun little like, you know, side distraction to something that is going to be the flag bearer of Prime going forward. And it's because one of the criticisms that I heard about season one, when you get past all the dark and darkness and the cynical themes and the piles and piles of bodies and blood, is that the reference material, the comic, was all of the stuff it was parroting was Bush administration era politics. And when it was brought up into 2018, 2017, it was like, yeah, that's fine if this were made in like 2006, but all those references just feel really dated now. And by episode three of season two, it switches from, yeah, we're talking about, you know, these super terrorists, to no, now we're getting rid of that plot line and going right into stuff that is so prevalent right now that everybody's sitting around going, did they know the future? How the heck did they know this would fit so perfectly into right now?
If a pandemic comes out, that's gonna be really
weird. Good God. Like, but the fact that they just modernized like all of the topics.
Yeah.
Elevated this show beyond what we thought it could be, I think.
Well, right. Victoria is a perfect example of that, right? Like,
right.
Victor is a Bush era, like, he's like the vice president. He's like Tony a B. Bush Cheney. Era. Yeah, right? So he's a Bush era thing. He's played up. Like, it's all that stuff of that time in that book. And so then to turn it around, flip it, make it, like, put some AOC in there, right? That some of that's obvious, like they were kind of playing with that, but then they subvert that too, and to modernize all that just in that one small character, I feel like is indicative of the whole season.
And I think we even touched on early in season how it was just so funny how, because they changed Stormfront, who was a male in the comics, and to make this character for Aya Cash, and they didn't know at the time that they were going to be nailing like literally both sides of the take the Portland riots and combine them into one character, into these like extremist kind of, you know, right wing, you know, Nazi things, given the visage of a left wing Portland, you know, progressive crusader, and kind of in some way subverting both sides at the same time and kind of sending up both sides in this one character in a way at a time that they could have possibly predicted would be so timely. Yeah. And it was just, it was kind of really funny. So hats off to the boys season two. Yeah. This is going to become a big merchandising thing.
I'm curious, is Stormfront still alive? Because they said that they relocated her. So I'm guessing she's going to come back with some,
we know
like,
she
metal
can regenerate.
Arms. Oh, okay.
Although I gotta say, nice work by subtly proving that Ryan is already stronger than Homelander, because we know that the I-beams hurt Stormfront, but it's more of like a kink thing. With him, it's your legs are gone. So they're pulling a Gohan with him, and
that's the first thing I said when I saw it. I was like, well, maybe Homelander chooses not to go as like aggressive. I don't know. So that's good. I'm glad you clarified that.
All right. Well, that's The Boys season two. If you guys haven't checked that out, what are you doing with your life? I'm going to take a quick stop in at Lovecraft Country, because this episode, as we're getting to the season finale next week, this is the penultimate episode. And this one was a very, really powerful episode. A lot of people have been kind of responding and writing about this, because HBO's Watchmen started out by kind of showing us this fictionalized version of the Tulsa Massacre. This episode of Lovecraft Country, the heroes need an important artifact that has been destroyed in the present. So they have to go back to the past, to where the main character's family was. And the pivotal story of the main character's family is that his father, his uncle, and the woman they both loved were all bonded because they were next door's neighbors in Tulsa and escaped the massacre together. So they have to go back to the night of the Tulsa massacre and get the book out before Tulsa is destroyed. And it's a pretty intense episode because it's with Michael K. Williams, who is like one of the best actors like around. If you don't know who that is, he played like Omar in The Wire, and you should definitely know who Michael K. Williams is by now. But yeah, he plays Montrose Freeman, and it's just, he's the guy who is, he's one of the people who escaped Tulsa. So it's like him going back in time in this very twisted Back to the Future episode where they literally have to go back to 1921 and they have to get this thing in this ticking clock of time and watch this horrible event unfold. And if you thought Watchmen was intense about that particular little part of history, this episode of Lovecraft Country will kind of really, really kick you in the gut. I mean, it is a pretty tough watch because it is just like literally the minute to hour like unfolding of these kind of battles between, you know, white and black people around town and the shootouts and then the escalation and the bombings and the air raids and all that stuff. And there's some pretty awesome scenes, and Journey Smollett is really killing it on the show because there's just one sequence where she actually got burned like filming it, and she actually finished this take and like then went to the hospital.
Holy cow.
It's just about because her characters for whatever reason is able to kind of walk through this intense pyrotechnic sequence, and it's a pretty powerful thing. But Lovecraft Country, like I said, is just wonderfully like weird, awesome storytelling, and Misha Green has done like an awesome job with this series. And I don't think we've had the official season two renewal, but I hope they do renew it for season two, because each week it's just, like I said, it's not just horror. It is like H.P. Lovecraft. It is like different elements, like strange, weird tales. There's been a futuristic sci-fi one. And like I said, there was this Korean K-horror story one week. This one was like I said, a twisted Back to the Future thing, all with like predominantly African-American themes and characters and stuff like that. And it's been a pretty great show. So that's Lovecraft Country. Check that out. Moving right back along to Janelle's neck of the woods, Walking Dead.
I did not watch Fear. I'm going to tell you. I don't watch Fear of the Walking Dead anymore.
Wow.
I don't watch it. I gave up season two. I stopped watching.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
You guys, you put me on Comic Book Nation. Now I'm reading Three Jokers and watching.
Oh, like, yeah.
Don't try to pivot. Dr. Don't try to pivot.
No.
I was here. I was all set up. I was like, Janelle.
Leave it in the past, Janelle. Come to the comics world.
I am. I'm upset. I can't stop reading comics lately. Yes. But I will say I did watch World Beyond because I'm trying to give it a chance. Did anybody else watch this?
Man, no. Come on,
I did,
man.
Not good. I want to.
Kofi, it is, y'all. Episode one, I was okay. I was interested. I was intrigued. I got Matt intrigued. Episode two, I'm having a hard time stomaching this show because number one, our lead character has the most fabulous hair and she's out trying to like, she's trying to kill walkers and she can't. They call them empties. She physically, they're children who have never killed walkers and they've been living in this world for 10 years. We're so far past this in the other shows that I'm having a very hard time getting into this because they've already come across so many walkers and not been able to kill one yet. And so I'm just kind of having a hard time sinking my teeth into it. But it's the episode, I feel like the third episode is going to be a make it or break it for me. If they can't reel it in and give me something that I really want to like continue to watch, like I don't know if I'm going to continue to watch this one either, which flip it around is making me want to go back to Fear because I've heard that the Fear episode is extremely Morgan heavy, who is, you know, obviously from the original series and from like the first season. And it's really cool. A lot of awesome things that I've heard about this episode because I read the reviews and I read everything that's going on in this. I haven't watched it because I swear to you guys, I'm obsessed with like Marvel and DC now, but it's awesome. You guys should be so proud of me. But I guess Morgan gets by
No, I got it. Don't worry. I got this one.
You watched it?
Oh, yeah. I'm a loyal watcher of Fear the Walking Dead. So.
Oh, good. Wait, can you tell me, like, has it?
Just sit back. I got this one. So Fear the Walking Dead is back for season 6. And if you have followed this show and our conversations before, you know that Fear and Walking Dead really ebbs and flows. Like, it is really good sometimes. Like, season 3, one of the best seasons of any Walking Dead show I've seen. If Brandon Davis was here, he would join me in this. Charlie Ridgely, I think so too. Really great. Season 4, when Morgan came in, it was kind of like, okay, there's some interesting characters here I really like. Like, I like Al. I like the cast of characters they assembled. I like Al. I like dude who plays John. I like June. I like their kind of union with the remnants of the original cast. I liked all that. But somewhere in the halfway point of season 4, things like the villain, the crazy lady, that kind of got really boring. Season 5 was just trash.
Oh, no.
Season 5 of Fear of the Walking Dead was really bad. I mean, just straight up. And by the end, with the kind of the Western town, the girl who plays Ashley, which I just figured out this week,
yes,
from the boys playing the kind of weird Western sheriff lady. And that just all got really bad and sloppy. So I was kind of disappointed because I thought Fear had taken all these elements of characters I really liked. New character, taken Morgan, a really strong character. Like I said, the new characters like June and John, that episode of them on that little marsh island, still one of my favorite Walking Dead episodes of all time. Yeah, and Al and these interesting characters and kind of squandered it. So far we have season 6 and the premiere is very much a Morgan story again. Probably the most Morgan heavy story we've seen since he met the cheesecloth guy or the cheese maker, and learned about kind of, you know, Tai Chi or whatever he learned and all that stuff, and the art of peace. And this is about Morgan, who was left for dead at the other one. And we're going to talk full spoilers here. Okay. So Morgan doesn't die, but he is barely patched up and is dying of infection from his gunshot wound. He's been doing this for over a month. And he's been waiting for this person in a watchtower. And there's some things that I didn't like about it because it's still like Morgan's character. I think they need to let go of this theme of Morgan being like adrift and, oh, I don't know if I want to live and be connected to life and be connected to people. Like, we need to drop all that.
They kind of do that with Carol too, which I'm like, she's done.
It's just
that.
Like, you guys got to make up your mind eventually.
Right.
And so luckily they don't spend too much time on that because they introduce some interesting characters. There's a great villain for this episode, who is this African-American guy who is very much a cowboy. He has a hound dog and he carries this huge axe and he's basically a contract hunter or bounty hunter. And he works with that, the Sally or whatever her name is, the kind of cowgirl who leads that like little weird Western society. So she's hired by him to find Morgan because they know he's still alive and out there. And that guy is an awesome villain. And the actor who plays him does a very good job. And there's like this awesome, creepy scene where he meets a guy who's running away from somebody who he knows is chasing him. And he comes by the fire and they're eating beans together. And then the dog comes through the bushes and he's like, oh, my God, there's that dog. And he's like, oh, come here, Rufus. And he's like, what? He's like, you know, he's like, yeah, of course, he's my dog. And the guy's like, wait, what? And he just takes his head off with a freaking axe. And he keeps the heads in boxes to deliver to his clients when they're zombified. So that the basic episode is Morgan and this guy he meets, who's having a baby and needs help to clear these walkers who have trapped his pregnant wife so he can get to his baby. And he was an ex-Marine and our name is Isaac and he's played by a very good actor who I forget, but his name, but yeah, they do a good job. And it's just these three guys basically in this cat and mouse chase game with a guy hunting them to get back to this pregnant lady and a baby. And along the way, Morgan working out his issues, but it was surprisingly good. Well-directed, very well-directed and like tense and scary because of the villain who was very good. And the point is kind of Morgan decides to, it's a cheesy ending where he just decides he's not Morgan anymore. He's some new dude. I don't know what the P. Diddy of that all is about, but, he's basically going to try to, the season arc is him. His people have been basically taken and enslaved by this Western society and they're all trapped inside. And so we find out at the very end where they are and he is going to basically work to get them out. But it has to be this kind of chess game process because if, you know, the Sally or whatever her name is figures out that he's doing this, she's just going to start knocking them off. So it's kind of like a covert, it's kind of like a, I forget what that movie is, Dirty Dozen type deal. They got to get the hell out of this kind of, you know, camp and escape. So I'm looking forward to this and I'm looking forward to seeing more of the crew back. But this was a good first episode. It made me care about Fear the Walking Dead.
And I was going to ask you if someone were to pick it back up, would you say that you could dive back in this season, or do you need to make sure you have context by watching the bad last half of the previous season?
I think you just need to watch enough to know who the characters are.
Like, yeah. Like recaps.
Yeah. Like just to know who the basic sketches of these new characters are. And then you can probably pretty much jump in this season. But no, I'm happy to have Fear back at this point right now. And I'll be looking forward to the next few weeks of it, because I'd rather watch this than The Walking Dead World Beyond.
I could totally see I could see you sitting there rolling your eyes watching this whole show. Like I can envision you going, are you serious? Like, because they can't.
Well, I'm more aggressive. Progress. I'd be screaming, kill her at the zombies. I'd be rooting for the zombies.
Yeah. It's
like, eat her.
It is becoming, it is more of a coming of age than I thought it was going to be based off the first episode. So I'm kind of disappointed. And it's weird because I've been reading reviews and like IGN said that this was a great episode and it's like, there's a team building exercise and stuff. And I'm just like, I don't agree.
These kids are growing up right now. I was just talking to my niece who's in freshman high school. They're growing up in the time of Rona. These kids are ready to kill somebody. Yeah. coughing too hard near them, let alone zombies. They're ready.
And I don't want to say that like the special effects are fantastic. I think it's very beautifully shot. I think that the actors are definitely doing what is in their script. I just don't know if the storyline is something that I'm really going to want to pay attention to going forward.
Doing this series much more of a favor by even still talking about it. Yeah,
I took the time to watch it, so I figured I'd talk about it.
I'm sorry, I don't mean this in any bad way, but you picked the wrong choice this week.
I know. I'm learning.
It's all good. Come back to Fear. It's all good. Come back to your friends at Fear.
I think I will.
Let's leave this muddled world of The Walking Dead behind and get over to comics, which where things are much clearer, right? All right, so we don't have a lot of time, but I want to give these guys time because we have to talk some wrestling stuff today, but... Matt, let's get a rundown of comics and we can talk Three Jokers real quick because Janelle's here, but we're kind of getting a little bit long in the tooth with that one. I also just want to touch on Rorschach real quick.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me run through the books this week. There are a lot. So we have Detective Comics number 1028. We also have The Amazing Spider-Man number 50. We have Wonder Woman number 764. We have the Immortal Hulk number 38, which is the full reveal of Devil Hulk, for those who've been waiting. We have Avengers number 37. We have Superman number 26. Now, for the X of Swords chapters, there are three more this week. We have Hellions number 5, New Mutants number 13, and Cable number 5. We also have Dark Knight's Death Metal number 4, Captain Marvel number 22, Rorschach number 1, Once in Future number 12, Seven Secrets number 3, Commanders in Crisis number 1. And if you read any one book this week, please read We Live number 1, which is from Aftershock, which is fantastic. It has a fantastic first issue. So that is comics. So now we can actually dive into like a little bit deeper stuff.
All right. So we can talk Three Jokers real quick. So I don't want to spend too much time it's been out for like a hot minute, but Janelle, we were waiting to see what you thought when you got Three Jokers number 2.
I am such a fan.
Huge,
because they have Joker zombies. I'm like freaking out. I about like dropped my jaw when I saw this section in this book with these beautiful Joker walkers, like a horde of them. It was so fantastic.
Jason Fabok is a good artist.
Yeah. I mean, there's some pretty creepy imagery in this one of like all those bodies, like Joker basically is hiding out in the YMCA and they've soaked all these unwitting victims in a pool of Joker chemicals. Like literally they're just all floating in a pool. And of course, as Janelle alluded to, they are zombies.
You're not sure if they're Jokers. Animated. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like the two Jokers are making more Jokers and kind of doing that. And issue one ended with Red Hood killing one of the Jokers, the one that had beat him with a crowbar, crippling him. And this deals with the aftermath of that as he's on the rampage and Batgirl and Batman.
Batgirl is like so upset about this. And I don't know what her problem is.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because she and Jason both had these really horrible experiences with the Joker, like beating them or nearly killing them or crippling them. And she dealt with it in a much healthier way than Red Hood.
Which we come to discover a little bit more in this book. which is cool. Like, but, she saved everything.
Yeah, the creepiest thing that happens to me in this book is that Batgirl and Red Hood kiss. And
like, I was going to ask you guys about that.
I don't know. What it, is it? Okay, what is it with recent Batman stories? geez, Killing Joke shoehorned a Batgirl Batman kiss.
Oh god, for some reason, so bad.
No warrant. Like, it wasn't warranted. And this all.
And do they go anywhere? Because if they don't go anywhere, then it's like, why did it happen?
No, man. Batgirl doesn't need to become the passed around person in the Bat family. Like,
Batgirl, stop Dick. That. Just that's
Barbara and Dick have lazy. Their thing. Like, you know,
that's lazy to me. Like, there's no other than shock value.
I mean, I got it, but you didn't need the kiss. Like, I actually liked the scene up until that, because they bond over the fact that, like, she's the one compassionate person that says, like, you know, it's not so bad. It's not your fault. You're such a screw. You like,
And he gets what he's always needed.
Yeah, the core stuff is great. Yeah. It was just up until that part, because then you add in all this tropey angst stuff between them now. And like, I don't know. I don't need any of that. Like, it was good before that. That was just shock value to me. That's all that was. Was just like, hey, we're going to get it. Like,
I just ignored it and kept, that didn't happen.
I think the biggest thing I've seen on the kind of just reading, like, the response is that, I forget the character's name, but people have speculated that the main Joker, like the mastermind guy, is going to be revealed to be like this crazy obscure Batman villain that he like first busted and threw into a chemical tank long, like before the Joker was ever created. It was like a crime boss. I forget his name, is like Sharp, maybe, like something like that. Anyway.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. It's just going to be some weird reach back into, like, I feel like it's a Batman 1940s stuff, but I still don't think the whole concept of the three Jokers thing holds water at its center as an interesting thing.
I thought it was better here because you only had the two, and there are actual distinct differences between the two, because he got rid of the other one. It's not as muddled, but that said, I agree. I still don't really know why we're doing this.
I guess I'm just envisioning that, like, our original Joker pulled all these strings. This is all part of a bigger plan. He created the triplets and he is somewhere else doing whatever else, or he's taking a freaking vacation and he's just like, I'm going to make an entire army of Jokers. I don't know. That's what, like,
I mean, look, your guess is as good as mine, because I still don't really know where this fits.
And yeah.
I will say, though, what I will say is, I don't, the kiss aside, which was like, really, like, that's just annoying. Kiss aside, and like,
I had already forgotten about that part.
the kiss, and like the fact that, like, I'm still not understanding. This feels like a project from a bygone plan that has now since been distanced, and like 5G is not happening, or it's kind of happening. It's all this other stuff. So it's a little outdated in that respect. But I liked the overall issue. Like, I'm actually finding myself liking this, and, you know, I mean, current issues with John's, with Ray Fisher and all that stuff, like, just taking that out of the equation, and like, just taking John's writing in the past. John's writes good superhero stuff sometimes. So, like, this is a fundamentally, like, I'm interested. I want to keep reading. It does hook me in that way. But, you know, I still have issues. But I come away like, oh, I want to read the next issue.
And that's, I just think it's an interesting mystery to nowhere, is what I'm kind of kind of worried about. Like,
and there's only one issue left, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
They got to do a lot of heavy lifting with this last one to kind of justify its own existence.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be longer. Wow. Yeah.
And so we're going to see. I'm kind of scared about the landing, but we're going to see what happens. All right. I do want to touch really quickly on this Rorschach series. So Rorschach has a new series that came out. It's by our man, Tom King.
Are you doing spoilers or no? Do we need to warn?
Yes, we're going to do spoilers.
Okay, cool.
Because, I mean, it's really just about a kind of a procedural that leads up to one big thing at the end.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk full spoilers on the Rorschach new series. So first things first, what I thought, and I don't know if we spun this out yet. We should probably do that before people hear this. Did we establish that this was connected to the HBO series?
No, we have not.
But we should, because that is definitely established in here, because they are talking about Rorschach in the context of the post kind of Rorschach gangs of Oklahoma.
There were some people talking about it online that it was kind of like, there are suggestions, but they don't come out right out and say
no. But the Oklahoma, they mentioned Oklahoma, which was of course where the Rorschach gangs were, the right wing gangs were using the Rorschach mask, and they're saying people, because they mentioned it in the context that people are still buying Rorschach masks even after that controversy in Oklahoma. So this is set in the same universe as the HBO series. It's now part of that canon. So that's interesting. We're going to spin that out. But the main kind of thrust of this story is that it starts, Tom King is definitely a playwright at heart. It starts in the middle of this big thing, which two people who are attempting a political assassination of a presidential candidate are shot down on this catwalk. One of them's in a Rorschach mask and one of them is in this like Sally Two gunslinger costume. And it's the kind of cop or FBI or whatever their official status is, a cop or an Fed, I don't know what it is exactly, but they're investigating who this person, who these two people are. And that's essentially the whole issue. It's just them talking while going through the post-crime stages of like examining the bodies, you know, looking at the crime scene, detectives going home and thinking about the case and kind of thinking over it. And that's just it. And this is what Tom King does so well. Like, it's actually just a mundane series of actual action steps. But the conversation and the kind of reflection and the dialogue is actually really interesting, because what he does is basically flesh out where we are in the world of Watchmen at this point and kind of begin to make all these kind of broad brushstrokes to these larger things that are happening, specifically who this presidential candidate is, like what this means, what the political kind of allegory is to this. And it ends on one big crazy twist, which is that these two assassins were shot down. Oh, they interview a cop who was nearly, who was, you know, there were three cops killed or three cops attacked in this, and only one survived and is kind of like hanging on and not necessarily doing so well. But the person who shot down these assassins, and they kind of figure out this kind of way, the cop uses some smarts to get the fingerprints of Walter Kovacs, the original Rorschach who died in Watchmen, and he just checks them against the prints found on the bodies of these would-be assassins, and they're a match. And that's the end of the issue. So there's this now big mystery that how, like, Walter Kovacs is somehow, or somebody with his fingerprints is still now active running around this thing. And there's these little hints that there's that the cops or somebody encounters somebody who could be like Rorschach. And so what the hell is going on here? So yeah, like I said, Tom King does this thing where he takes his like very uncomic booky approach to things and is in these interesting ways you never really kind of expect the story to go into. And he can do things like make dialogue and just talking like into some interesting things. So I was kind of like, well, part of me was kind of like, you know, where are we going to get to the Rorschachness of all this? It was an interesting buildup and an interesting hook, because now I'm just like, now I got to know what's going on here. So yeah, it got me. I'm still kind of tentative whenever somebody starts a new Watchmen story, but I think I'm more open to it after seeing the HBO series and what you can do with that world. And so I'm kind of interested.
I agree with you. I'm always a little tentative. And frankly, I'm a little... even before the show came, I said it here, like, I'm a little Watchmen'd out. Like, it's not a world and a group of characters that really interests me anymore outside of like the original. Cause not because like I hold it as a sacred cow that others do, of like, you can't touch it. It's fine, whatever. It's just a comic story. It's a really good one, but it's a comic story. But like, I'm just not interested. And what this issue does is like you said, by the end of it, I cared. I was all of a sudden like, it hooked me enough, and it didn't play on every single one of those like, hey, Watchmen, remember Watchmen? Remember Watchmen? It doesn't do that. It doesn't jingle the bell like right in front of you the whole time, like trying to lure you into caring. It tells a really interesting character story between just these cops, and it feels like Law and Order at some parts. And then at the end, it's like, oh, it ties it together. You know, also just on a regular front, like, I'm getting a little tired. I feel like we're like two of the most positive people when it comes to Tom King and like stuff he writes. And I don't know what it is. I feel like there's just so much like backlash against like,
oh, I don't dip my toe in. People don't like Tom King.
Oh yeah, no, this thing is like, the Rorschach is very much a hot button of like why it should have been created in the first place, but also like King is very divisive.
Between the Batman Catwoman wedding, Heroes in Crisis, all the stuff with Booster Gold.
Like,
yeah, Heroes in Crisis was not good.
No,
but I also don't like how many of my favorite writers write stuff that ain't good. I can go through every single one. Grant Morrison is one of the best comic book writers alive, and he's writing a series right now that I'm supposed to love, and I'm just like, nah, it's not very good. Like, it happens.
Intern?
Yeah, Green Lantern. Yeah. Dude, it's not very good.
There are not many writers of comic books that issue to issue can make me.
It's hard.
As hooked and fulfilled as Tom King hard. Does, though.
Yeah.
Like, issue to issue, like City of Bane, issue to issue, that story was great.
Yeah.
That's my stance. I don't know what the comic community thinks.
No, it's all
right. Tom Taylor is my counter argument to that, because every episode of Deceased has been great.
Yeah, I love both.
Yeah.
I don't need a favorite Tom. All right. So that's Rorschach. You guys can read that, and I'm sure we'll see where this goes and tell you about it. All right, Connor and Matt, take us home. Give us a quick update on what is happening with the WWE draft.
So if you've been on the website at all the past couple of days, you know that the draft is happening, and well, it is over at this point, but we've recapped everything from the two-night event, including all of the supplementary draft picks, the free agent pickups. The bottom line is that a lot of what we thought was going to happen did happen. The big stars on both shows pretty much stayed put, and a lot of people throughout the mid-card switched places. Roman and Drew are still in the same spot. Seth and AJ switched. The tag title switched. The New Day broke up. Everyone's really upset about that.
I was going to ask you, what's the biggest upset of the whole thing?
Oh, it's easily New Day, because they've talked about not wanting to break up for years. They have always said, we want to stick together for the entirety of our
Xavier
careers.
Xavier Woods just told me that in an interview a month ago.
Oh my gosh.
Because what they were always afraid of was, oh, they're going to write a storyline where one of us gets jealous and he's going to turn on the other two, and that's how it's going to split. Instead, they do this thing where, oh, Raw only drafted Kofi and Xavier. They could have drafted Big E if they wanted to, but they didn't. So then SmackDown immediately picks up Big E. And now it feels like they're trying to play cleanup, where they're going around to all these videos and being like, no, New Day's, we're still a thing. We're still together. We're just on opposite brands. And you're like, that is not the same thing, and you know it.
That was so poorly handled. It really was poorly handled. Because you could have done the same thing, and if you just had correct messaging, it would have been fine. You could have still had Big E on SmackDown and do a singles push. And you could still had them on Raw, and they could have written it a thing of like, hey, we want to give you the platform to shine. You keep doing what you're doing. You go for the belt. We're going to hold things down over here. Like, there's ways to package this exact same thing and not make it seem like you're doing the same old, you know, like, I think it was like when I asked him, I was like, hey, so there's not going to be any Seth Rollins with a chair. Like, you're not going to take him out. But it lists. And instead, it's this cluster. Why is it this way? It didn't need to be this way. Anyway, whatever. It's fine.
Yeah. The thing is, other than that, I actually liked a lot of the moves that this draft made, especially with what we're doing with Raw, because if you look at the title scene now, I'm looking at Drew. I'm like, man, you better retain against Randy next week, because there are enough people on this show now where you could take a different challenger each month, mm-hmm. all the way up to the Rumble, and I wouldn't be bored. Nope. You got AJ. Agreed. You got Bray. You got Braun. You got Keith. You got Sheamus, which is something he's been campaigning for. Like, suddenly the top of the card is so loaded that I'm kind of looking at Keith Lee right now like, man, I hope they have plans for you. Because
he should have come to SmackDown, but I'll get to that at some point.
Exactly.
Down the line. Yeah.
Over on SmackDown, I think Seth desperately needed the move. I think he's the biggest move that got made on that show. My only problem with that is that he moves, and so does Dominic and Rey Mysterio and Murphy. So the storyline and Kevin Owens. So every storyline he has been a part of since November just followed him.
Well, I did find that funny that like they did that across the board. So like obviously like Fiend moved, Alexa moved.
And so did Alexa.
Yeah. So
and then, so did Braun whole thing going.
And then
Kevin Owens moved. So does Aleister Black move. Jeff Hardy moved. So does AJ.
Exactly. Like, yeah.
God, you can't get a new story to save your life.
Yeah. They did a Roman stayed, of course, and Jay stayed. Right. So like,
and The bullet that I can't wait for WWE to fire right now is give me heel Roman versus heel Seth. And don't try to make me like one of them.
Yeah.
Show me which one is more willing to sink to a lower level in order to win.
But see,
that's interesting.
Ironically, WWE now has not a problem, but the same thing that they had way back when. They don't have to force. People will now like Roman Reigns regardless. You don't actually have to do anything to him. Let him just do the same thing he's doing.
But I love that he's being evil. That's part of why people enjoy it.
It's not forced. No, it's not. Just letting him, like, don't give him some stupid, we're going to gouge out your eye. Don't give him any of that garbage. Just let him be the dude who wears a shirt with, like, I'm going to come wreck stuff. And just let him do that. And let Seth be.
Do you have any idea how many page views we'd get if Roman took somebody's eye out? I can show you what the number Seth did, because that was absurd.
I don't want the momentary blip for us. To me, is not worth having to sit and watch that horrid crap. I don't want any more of that. I don't want it. Don't do it. Just let them be cool. Just let them be cool. It's okay. It's okay to be cool. Anyway, it's fine.
Since we're short on time, we'll only get to this segment. Biggest steal for each brand. Matt, go.
Bianca Belair for SmackDown. I feel like that's like, it could be Alexa Bliss levels back when she was drafted. You remember that? Absolutely. Like when she was first drafted from NXT. Everyone didn't really see it as that. And then she became like a huge star. Bianca Belair has been sitting over there, not being anything done with her. And this could be great for her. Also for Raw, ironically, Alexa Bliss and Fiend, but it's because they did all the focus testing on SmackDown. Like, we've had this whole build to Alexa Bliss becoming part with the Fiend. And like, now they have this whole Sister Abigail combo thing. Now Raw gets all that. Like, it's the whole meal has been cooked. And Raw gets to like just get the whole entree and just like run with it, as opposed to doing all the building that SmackDown's been doing for months. So I think that's great for them. Like, kudos.
I will match you on the SmackDown pick. I think Bianca is an absolute steal. On Raw, I'll go with AJ, because he was just kind of, other than the Daniel Bryan IC match and the ladder match, he hadn't been doing a lot with SmackDown. And you can instantly put him back in the WWE Championship picture just by having him look at Drew. Like,
yeah, he was there because he didn't want to be with Paul Heyman.
and ironically, 2 weeks later, Paul gets fired, so he's got to stick with them. And I think the overall winner of this entire draft was NXT, because they didn't lose anybody, and we were all worried about that.
I'm so happy. Now, my only thing, we weren't going to do losers, but like, to me, Keith Lee could have benefited from going over to SmackDown, especially since Riddle went to Raw.
Yeah.
And I was like, there's just this gaping hole. And man, I want to see that Lee Roman thing down the line. And you could have just had it brimming and do stuff. And now it's going to be a while, or until WWE comes up with something like, hey, there's 4 trades allowed during the season or whatever. And, you know, fix it that way.
All that hopefully. Yeah. But anyway, that is the wrap on the WWE draft. Hell in a Cell is coming up, not this weekend, but next weekend. And you bet we'll have a lot to say about that.
All right. Thanks, guys. That'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. We want to thank you guys for tuning in. As always, if you're just getting into the show, we put up new episodes every Wednesday and Friday on comicbook.com, where you can listen to episodes on the site, or you can listen to your favorite podcast platforms, which include Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Google Playlist, or you can tell any smart home device to fire up Comic Book Nation podcast. It will start playing with you for you. You can also find us at the official Twitter account at Comic Book Nation. We now have an official YouTube page for Comic Book Nation, where you can watch videos of us. If you don't catch the show when we air it live on Facebook every Wednesday and Friday, you can go to the Comic Book Nation YouTube page and catch it there as well. If you are just getting into the show and want to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we are going to be sending all our 5-star reviewers t-shirts when we get back into our building after the pandemic. So be sure to get on Apple Podcasts and leave us those 5-star reviews. If you want to talk to any of us, you can find me at Kofi Outlaw.
You can find me at Matt Aguilar CB.
You can find me at Janelle Wheeler.
You can find me at ConnorCasey_CB.
Otherwise, I want to thank you guys for tuning in, as always, to Comic Book Nation, and we will see you for our next episode. Peace.
Deuces.
Later.